Well, those of you that aren't familiar with Midwest production systems these days, dicamba is a major issue in the Midwest. And I work on vegetable crops at Southern Illinois University, and two of the important specialty crops grown in the state are pumpkins and horseradish. And we're going to talk a little bit about horseradish, since they're grown in close association with dicamba-tolerant soybeans. So horseradish is primarily utilized from the root, if you're not familiar with it, and it's a very important crop in and around the St. Louis area, right across the river in the Mississippi Valley region of Illinois. And Illinois leads the United States in production of this crop with about 1,000 hectares and about $25 million in farm gate revenue. Most is processed into various condiments. And it's primarily grown in the Mississippi River Valley region adjacent to St. Louis and Illinois, and they've been producing horseradish for 125 years. So there are families there that have just kind of been producing horseradish for years and years and years in that area. Kind of give you an idea of what a horseradish field looks like. So if you're driving through and around St. Louis this time of year, you look off the interstate there and you see a plant that looks like a turnip or something, it's horseradish. And there's a lot of acreage right around that area. So if you see the red dot there, that's the epicenter of horseradish production, which is Collinsville, Illinois. And the northern county there is Madison, and the southern county is St. Clair. So that's where most of all the horseradish is produced in Illinois, to kind of give you an idea of where horseradish is produced in the state. In Illinois. And so they grow horseradish there because of the soils, and I'll talk about the different types of characteristics of the soils that are needed. And it's grown in rotation with corn and soybeans. So the horseradish growers are corn and soybean growers. And so it's grown in very close association with these crops, right? And so you'll have soybeans across the field, corn across the field, where horseradish is being grown, because there's limited acreage for horseradish production in certain soils in those counties that I talked about. So due to this closeness to soybean production, there's a very high likelihood of dicamba herbicide drift and potential injury, since most soybeans grown are dicamba tolerant soybeans. So you can have an idea of what the percentage of dicamba tolerant soybeans are. I was just at Bayer 2 weeks ago and talking on another project and talking about the percentage, and I didn't know what the percentage is. You have any ideas what the percentage is?
Our state's over 95%.
It's 75% in Illinois. 75% and increasing. I could talk about dicamba tolerant soybeans and why it's going up and up and up instead of going down and causing all these problems or causing problems, but horseradish is grown in the association. I need to move on here. So many horseradish growers are concerned about this injury and yield loss due to dicamba being grown close by. Therefore, we conducted two experiments, a simulated drift study with dicamba on horseradish and a greenhouse study looking at variety susceptibility. So the first experiment was conducted at a grower field in Edwardsville, which is in northern part of Madison County, and in 2016-17 to simulate a mid-post application in DT soybean. So that would be mid-June to early July is when they're going to do that dicamba application, and then we did a greenhouse horseradish variety evaluation. For weed control, we did a blanket treatment of Authority Elite, which is sulfentrazone and S-metallochlor, and we used hand weeding the rest of the growing season. We used six dicamba rates. The first three rates there are the drift rates, and we'll talk about those a little bit more. And applications were made 23rd June 2015 and 5th July 2016. We used a variety that I developed. I'm also a horseradish breeder for the industry. So 315 is one of our varieties. We use four row plots, 7.6 meters long. Treatments were applied to the two center rows only to give borders on either side of those. What data do we collect? We collected a lot of data. Horseradish injury ratings, chlorosis and necrosis, 7, 14, 28, 42, 56 days after application. We also did a random subset of 10 plants in each plot. We're marked with heights collected 14, 28, 42, and 56. Plant stands were collected at 56 DAT to see the effect of dicamba on kill. Two center rows were harvested using a modified potato digger on those dates I have there. And we also did root yield characters, primary root yields, length, and diameter, which you'll see is very important. So what did we see here? If we look at foliar chlorosis and necrosis at 14 and 56 days after treatment, and these were pulled over the two growing seasons, I highlighted the drift rates in red, so you can kind of see those. And we had no foliar chlorosis and no necrosis on those drift rates, right? But if you look down a little bit lower at some of the standard rates, like the 1X rate, or if you do an over-application 2X rate, you see a little bit of foliar injury start to develop. If we look at plant stands and the heights that were attained on those horseradish plants at 56 days, again, if we look at the non-treated, compare those three highlighted drift rates that I have there, there's not a lot of difference going on there with a little bit of dicamba drift on horseradish. But if we go down to that 2X rate, we definitely see a difference in plant stands and in plant height for those horseradish plants. And then this is really the main one table here, showing horseradish yield, primary root weight, the length of the root, and the diameter that the root obtains pulled over those two growing seasons. Again, if we look at those three highlighted rates that I have there that are the drift rates, again, you see for root yield, looking at the non-treated. The non-treated was just, we went through and hand weeded it pretty much all year, right? And applied no herbicide. So if you look at that root yield, it's pretty much the same as a non-treated. But when we go to higher rates for dicamba, we start to see some differences. And the average root rate was the same. Root length, pretty much the same. But when we start going down to those higher rates, we start to see some differences again. Same with root diameter. So those are important characteristics, right? The root yield is what the growers are really concerned with, right? They don't care what the foliage looks like or anything like that. They're really concerned with what the root yield is going to be. And compared to 2,4-D, dicamba doesn't do much damage. 2,4-D will smoke horseradish. You put a drift rate on there, it will really tear it up. And that's what's coming out next. I'm going to talk about Enlist, right, which is the next step they just released this year, and that's the hot topic in the Midwest is Enlist soybeans. So results from this study, we see that the drift rates provided no real horseradish injury, no effect on yield or root size reductions. However, recommended spray rates did cause a little bit of reduction. So overspraying adjacent soybean field with dicamba, because everything's grown really close, and they do oversprays all the time. If you overspray a soybean field, you're going to get injury to horseradish. So we also did a greenhouse evaluation looking at five different horseradish varieties to dicamba. I list those varieties there. Three runs in the greenhouse with three replications each. Pots that we treated with dicamba were stored in a climate-controlled room outside the greenhouse for 24 hours after treatment to prevent volatilization to other plants in the greenhouse. And We have a really good weed science program at SIU, agronomic crops, and they have a spray chamber and all this stuff, so we can use that. And the data collected was a little bit less than the previous study. Foliar chlorosis, necrosis, and epinasty, a little bit of twisting, height reductions, overall plant injury at those timings I had on there. So what did we come up with? We see, based on the varieties that we evaluated at 14 DAT, looking at foliar chlorosis, that we had a couple of varieties that had a little less injury than other varieties. And growers like certain varieties. They don't grow other varieties. Some varieties are grown, some are not. So it just kind of depends on the specific grower that are doing those things, right? So it just really kind of depends on that. So if we look at foliar necrosis here on injury at 28 days, so we're looking at necrosis on those plants. We see again variety 604 is starting to kind of stand out a little bit as being a little more tolerant to this dicamba treatments. And we were kind of surprised about this to kind of see that. And again, if we look at height reduction, 28 days when the experiment was terminated, again, we see variety 604 start to kind of show a little more resistance or tolerance, I should say, to dicamba applications. So we definitely see differences in tolerance to dicamba between horseradish varieties. And I think that's a lot of what growers are having problems with. They'll say, oh, we got some injury at some of the drift rates because they grow so many different varieties. There's probably 50 different varieties that growers use, old varieties, new varieties, depending upon what they're trying to do. They're trying to get a lot of biomass. They'll take a chance and try to grow one variety that has very little root discoloration resistance, because that's a major issue. But you can get higher yields. So dicamba caused less injury and height reductions to 604 horseradish compared to the other four varieties that we looked at. So pretty much we didn't have a lot of injury going on here. So simulated drift, really not an issue in horseradish production. We did have a little bit of a varietal response to dicamba tolerance, but it's important to understand that the drift and potential yield loss is minimized by avoiding trying to plant horseradish with DT-tolerant soybeans. As I said, Enlist is the hot topic this year in the Midwest for soybeans. How much Enlist is going to be grown compared to dicamba-tolerant soybeans? And that's a major issue that's we're going to have to kind of deal with at that point. Even though 2,4-D is less of a drift and volatilization injury than is dicamba. And we have to be aware of specific weather conditions that can potentially increase the chance of a drift or possibly volatilization event in there. So just to kind of give an overview here, dicamba is a major problem right now in Midwest specialty crop production systems, if you're not aware of it. And that's why I wanted to kind of make you aware of this. It's a major issue in the Midwest because there's so many soybeans that are grown. Illinois is the number one state in soybean production. So my colleague at SIU, who's a weed scientist, Carla Gage, she's really working on a lot of the periphery plants, like the native plants and all the trees. How's that being affected? You drive along these fields, and you see all these trees that are cupped with injury, epinasty, and how's that affecting all the biodiversity around there? So we need to kind of remember that new technologies like DT soybean production systems is going to improve weed control, but may also pose challenges in managing drift and especially crop sensitivity. Although drift and volatilization are important concerns to a lot of different specialty crops, it appears that it's not a big of a problem as it is to like peaches, apples, and tomatoes, and a lot of these other specialty crops that are having real problems. So if you have a question or two, I have like a minute or so, I can take a question or two from this. Yes. I am, a little bit. This was also a part of a study where we had a grad student who compared 2,4-D and dicamba. 2,4-D was by far much worse, but I was really surprised because growers had told me in the past, oh, we can't put dicamba anywhere near horseradish because it'll stay in the soil and we can't come back and replant in the soil. But we did those studies. That paper's been published in Weed Tech to look at the differences in rotational stuff. And we didn't really see a difference in that at all. But it really surprises me that it's more tolerant to dicamba than a lot of stuff, because dicamba really affects a lot of issues. And one of the major problems we have right now in horseradish production, which we're working on this summer trying to solve, is Palmer amaranth. Palmer is a nasty, nasty weed. If you've ever been in a field with Palmer, it is bad. And growers told me at our meeting this past, horseradish growers in our meeting this past year, that if we don't get the Palmer issue solved, we're going to be out of business. Because that area is just loaded with Palmer, and we've had issues, and growers had issues, and we've been working on Palmer for the last couple of years trying to solve some issues in horseradish. But the main issue is horseradish never closes canopy. You know, they pile these soybeans in and corn, so you get canopy and you get coverage of the soil. Horseradish never really closes canopy. It has open soil all year in between those rows and the furrows. So if you have an open canopy, Palmer becomes such a devastating weed, and how are you going to kind of control it? We've got some pretty good pre's that we can kind of use for Palmer that holds us for about 7 weeks, like sulfentrazone and metolachlor, but we're going to have a lot of work ahead of us for Palmer in horseradish production. So with that, if you got any more questions, I got another talk coming up too. So
thanks a lot. Much.